The following podcast may contain mature themes and coarse language. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the No Fear Project Podcast. I'm your co-host, Pete D'Amico, along with Nicole Wilds. How are you?
Good morning. I am okay.
You're okay.
I know the socially acceptable answer is to always say, oh, I'm good, how are you? I'm fine, everything's fine.
I'm a dumpster fire. I'm a train wreck.
This has been a crazy last couple weeks. I'd say last week has been a little bit off the chain.
Yeah, what's going on? You want to share anything?
Yeah, I'll talk about it because I think it's probably pretty relatable. So we had sort of gone above and beyond with Thanksgiving to try to make sure that we were doing a responsible Thanksgiving. My people are from Jersey. I am the only one who lives in Pennsylvania. So, it was a much smaller Thanksgiving. It was going to be, we were doing things like, instead of one big table, we were doing smaller tables and we were kind of spacing people out. And I mean, again, I think that some of that's the hygiene theatrics that we do. Because if someone in the room has COVID, the odds are like, we're going to get the COVID, right?
Right. So your family, one way or some portion, at least, of your family is planning to get together for Thanksgiving.
Well, no.
Okay.
No. Well, yes and no. So that was last week.
And then
the governor came out with the mandates that said if you leave the state, you need to quarantine for 14 days. And at that point, there wasn't an emergency meeting that the school board's having, which they're having this week, to determine whether or not we stay in school. So we were going to, so the idea of my kids who haven't been in school, in-person school, since March, and just went back to school October 26th and then November 9th, I think. The thought of them missing 2 weeks of school just, it just wasn't flying in our house, And again, it was a much smaller Thanksgiving. The people who were going to be there are people who work from home. It was we did everything we were supposed to do, and then these mandates come in, and then trying to tell my 74-year-old mother-in-law that we're not coming from Thanksgiving. Well, first, I think this is the thing that people right now are struggling with, and we may have talked about it last time, but it's that mental load, like trying to decide what's worse, right? All of the decision-making. So my mother-in-law is upset, saying, I don't know how many more Thanksgivings I have left, and I can't believe my own children aren't coming, and, the whole guilt with that. And then, trying to do right by the world and do right by your family and your community. And then I kind of bend rules, but I don't totally break them. So if someone says you have to quarantine for 14 days, I'm not going to send my first grader to school the next Tuesday, because people are like, well, it doesn't matter, you don't have to listen. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not going to have my first grader be the one who A, brings it to her class, but B, also tells her teacher, we went to Jersey for the weekend, and here I am. Ta-da! So it's just been a lot of, super stressful decision-making, and no matter what the end result feels like, everyone's disappointed.
It kind of describes 2020, period. Like that line, right? Like, no matter what we do, everyone is disappointed.
I'm going to write that down. That's funny. It shouldn't be, but it is.
I mean, it's funny because it's true.
Yeah, it really was. So that was my week. And then, we made the decision to stay home. And then, so now we're dealing with the aftermath of that. From the in-laws.
So staying home, and are you guys planning? I mean, you don't have to tell us, I guess. Maybe that's rude given today's climate to say if anybody's coming over for Thanksgiving or not. I mean, I think it's a really interesting time, right? For something that is taken for granted and so simple. It's Thanksgiving. It's the ultimate family feast. You get together with family, friends, whoever you've got.
Right. Right. No, we're just going to be the four wilds in the household. I don't know. Maybe we might have good friends who, you know, our daughters go to school together, maybe for dessert. It's really hard to tell my mother-in-law, I can't hang out with you, but I can have my friends come over later.
Yeah.
Right. So that's that. What about, how are you?
You know, I think I'm turning a corner. I kind of leaned into, I'm just going to be like a gluttonous sloth.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of leaned into it for a little bit to just get it out of my system. And I kind of just gave up on eating well. I just ate shit and enjoyed it. Consciously ate it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've been walking, running a little bit. That exercise piece is big for me. But mm-hmm. I suffer from chronic depression and I've been depressed. I mean, it's... Mm-hmm. I've been depressed more this year than ever. Not surprising, right? Because people who don't suffer from depression on a chronic basis are having mm-hmm. acute depression based on circumstances. So when you put somebody who has chronic depression into this dumpster fire, mm-hmm. we tend to kind of take it a little bit worse overall. And mm-hmm. I've really been trying to avoid meds. That's just a personal decision for me. Mm-hmm. I've really just been trying to use the techniques and things that I know have worked. And I think I'm finally kind of turning the corner because I kind of just went, look, everything, I hate the saying it is what it is, but it's
right.
It's true. It is what it is right now. I can't change every circumstance. So I kind of just did what I wanted. And on Saturday, so I've been in the wine business for a long time. For anybody who doesn't know or is just starting to listen, I don't know, 15, 16 years in the wine business now. So I know people and I love Italian wine and I love really good food. One of our friends is a distributor and his wines were being used for this promotion where you buy a case of great Italian wine at a discount and you get a black truffle.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. A freshly imported black truffle from Italy. And they're, to me, truffle's heaven to me. So I'm like, Nebbiolo and truffle. So the grape is Nebbiolo. So the type of wine. So I went and bought it and picked it up, got it. And then Saturday with a couple of good friends who also got the same thing, kind of our foodie friends, who I talk about all the time, Jen and Boone on this podcast, others. And then we got on Zoom and we made the same meal, had the same wine and had our dinner. Right. And it was so good and so just absolutely over the top. I called it like the ultimate mac and cheese because basically it was pasta with mm-hmm. a ton of Taleggio cheese and then some Parmesan cheese and then a ton of truffle shaved over it.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
And, you know, it was great. And during that conversation with them, you know, they were planning on having a party, a get together, a very small dinner party. Just there's like 10 of us who get together that way. And it was the usual 10 of us. And it's coming up. And the conversation goes around like, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like they wanted us to make the answer for them, you know, mm-hmm. and Jen, you know, I don't think Boone listens, but Jen might. If you're listening, it's not like, that's not a negative thing. Like, I just feel like you really were looking for guidance because I think that probably I personally am the most paranoid out of everybody when it comes mm-hmm. to coronavirus. And
mm-hmm.
part of that is because somebody that I know, you know, for same age as me recently that I've known since early in college, they died and mm-hmm. they had no comorbidities. His wife had passed away before from breast cancer. So you leave two children orphaned at this point mm-hmm. in high school. And that got me. Like, I've always been pretty serious about this, but when that happens, when somebody that you know passes from this
mm-hmm.
and leaves a circumstance that you're just afraid of,
right?
It really got me, right? And so I think that I'm probably a little more over the top, probably with kind of the way I'm looking at it. Not that I'm a hermit. I'm not, you know, I do go shopping, you know, when I need to, but I am masked up. I am ready to go. I agree with you on mm-hmm. the hygiene thing, you know, got super hype, and I'm not sure who the people are that weren't washing their hands before, but
no.
I'm not sure that this has impacted them. Overall, like I feel like I'm personally turning a corner, but I'm also in that same boat with, okay, lucky for me, family, like the immediate family overall for me said, look, we're not coming. Mm-hmm. So that was great. So it was really down just to my mom and dad, you know, will they come over, but they had been in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So they had traveled, and I'm like, you know, and luckily, you know, they were both like, yep, totally. Like things have changed. Like it exploded here in Illinois. I don't know. I noticed it exploded across the country. I don't pay that much attention to numbers or what have you, but you know, here in Illinois, we're talking 10 to 15,000 cases a day.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty high.
Right.
So instead, what we're doing with that is my wife and older daughter are going to cook, and I'm going to deliver meals to my parents and to my grandma and uncle.
Oh, I love that.
So that they've got traditional Thanksgiving feast cooked by, you know, the Gretchen and Lily, because that... it's one of the things that Gretchen loves the most, like Thanksgiving dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, what can we do? You know, we can't get it to everybody. We can't get it to my sister, my brother, but the older generation is getting the mm-hmm. meal, you know? So the patriarchs of the family are getting the meal. So we're kind of doing it that way. I didn't know what else to do, but you know, and it's so weird trying to discuss this or talk about it, because I feel like I'm turning the corner, but mm-hmm. I don't really have evidence of it.
Right.
Yet.
Yeah. It's the whole thing of just, what did you say before? A gluttonous sloth, right?
Yeah.
Like that's like the perfect, I'm like, yes, same. That's how I feel. I feel like, and it's fascinating to me because I think this is what people struggle with all the time, which is this idea where a part of you knows the things that you ought to be doing to make yourself, it's not even feel better, because it's just, this is always so weird when I say this out loud. Like, I'm not a huge fan of that, like, positivity, almost like that toxic positivity. Like, we're not allowed to be sad. I think that, you know, mad, sad, scared, and happy are the four basic human emotions. And so the odds are that, you know, 75% of those are what we would consider negative emotions, right? So there's nothing wrong with us when we're in that place. It's just when we're in that place too long that it becomes, or when that place becomes habitual, then we start to have problems. But I know for me that, and this is my struggle with the food stuff, because I know for me that it's the thing that will implement a pause button, right? Like, I just do better on that lower carb keto style. I always have. I went on, I think I did Atkins when I was like 19. And I remember thinking, wow, this must be what it is like for people who don't have a very bouncy brain. You know, it kind of leveled my mood. It leveled my impulsivity. It was great. And so there's the part of me that knows the thing that I need to do that can take the edge off of all of this. And then there's this other part that's like Netflix, you know,
right.
Netflix and chips. So,
yeah, I hear you. And, you know, we'll go into food stuff, I'm sure at some point pretty deep. Just because I need to talk through some things, mm-hmm. for sure. I actually am similar when it comes to that kind of lifestyle. I'm not keto, never have been, but watching the intake of processed sugars and grains, mm-hmm. I know I do better. So I don't call it like keto or no carb. I've been in my mind calling it right carb, because carbohydrates are not evil.
Right.
In and of themselves, right? So if you have vegetables, those are carbohydrates, not evil. I know, like, right. On strict keto, like, fruit is still kind of almost seen as the devil, but show me somebody who eats, you know, fruits and vegetables mostly, and they're not fat. Like, nobody got fat off an apple. Right. So it's kind of changing that mindset that it's the processed stuff, right? That mm-hmm. is really, but that's the stuff that I've been eating, and because it's delicious and it triggers those wonderful, you know,
dopamine
and I've described it this way before on Fat Man Chronicles, but for me, there are times in my life where I will sit and I'm agitated. I'm just agitated. I'm just sitting there agitated. And I know that the only key that is going to unlock what I need is sugar, just processed sugar. Mm-hmm. And you have to break that cycle. But that's where I've been lately. I ate a whole box of Christmas Crunch in like 2 days.
Yeah. All right. So wait, should we do something? Do you want to have like a, or you're committed to the gluttonous sloth until when? Like the new year?
Well, no, I'm committed to starting to try to like do good. So the one thing that we've talked about off air, we haven't talked about on air yet. Mm-hmm. And we'll do an entire episode and series of episodes, I'm sure, around. I turn 50 in January, and I have this plan to do a 50 at 50 challenge. So I'm building this list of 50 things that I want to accomplish during my 50th year on the planet. So I hate saying my birthday because it's not even on social or anything, but it's the 29th of January. So from January 29th of 2021 to January 29th of 2022, I'm going to have this list. And on there is some of it is weight loss, or at least redefining what health is for me right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have a number on it, because numbers are fine. But if I don't, if I say I want to lose 50 pounds, like, I'm not going to consider it a failure if I lose 30 mm-hmm. or 20 or even 10, because down in a year is better than up in a year.
Right.
And at my age, I keep thinking about this, right? So let's just say I get to live to be 85, you know, which, you know, my family's got decent genes when it comes to longevity. So let's just say I get to live to 85. That gives me 35 years. Mm-hmm. If I gain just 1 pound a year from here on out, I'm screwed when I'm old, because mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to move, because I'm going to be round and it's not going to be fun.
Right.
So there's going to be that. But I have so many other things on that list. Some are physical, some are mental, some are just kind of mundane things. And if anybody that's listening knows me and hasn't heard this before, I'm taking suggestions. But it's going to be good. And it's something else to think about while we're in the middle of a pandemic, because this thing isn't going away. I understand there's vaccines on the way, but it's not like the vaccine comes out and then we snap our fingers, like, you know, the end of Avengers, and it's, you know, everything disappears. Like, that's not the way this works.
Yeah.
So, it's going to be a fun project to work on. And I do think it fits within the theme, because part of what I want to do is I don't want to be a gluttonous sloth, and I want to be able to have conversations with people. And this is like one that I don't know how to define, but difficult conversations are important. And right now, that's really what you and I are talking about, is difficult conversations mm-hmm. with family and friends.
Right.
During a difficult time.
Right. But I do think the health stuff is critical. You know, I'm always surprised when I talk to another therapist who, when they do an intake with a client, doesn't ask them, well, tell me a little bit about your diet or your sleep or your exercise regime. because you can do talk therapy with someone until they're blue and, you know, until everyone's blue in the face. But if they are chronically inflamed in the gut, you're only going to get so far on the mood stuff, right? So I do think this is such an important piece. And it sounds like we have pretty similar issues when it comes to the food stuff. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if I could eat just like sugary cereal every morning, maybe, you know, throw in some, you know, donuts or whatever, cinnamon rolls.
Fun food. Yeah.
You know, and then I could have giant, you know, sandwiches for lunch and pasta for dinner and dessert and, you know, 14 handfuls of some sort of M&M or candy in between. That's what I would do. I mean, that my natural inclination is to eat crap. Like, it's not my natural inclination to eat well. So,
right.
And none of those foods, I guess over time, what I've finally come down to is I don't see those as evil.
Mm-mm.
Instead, I just see them as things that probably aren't the best for me, right? So I look at it like a friendship that has just kind of gone its course, mm-hmm. right? Those people aren't evil. Like, there's nothing wrong with them. It's just that we don't fit together anymore.
Right. And I call them fun foods.
Right.
With clients. I'll say they're fun foods. They're fun foods, but they are foods that, you know, like, my mind will, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, much, you know, because there's the brain chemistry behind what happens when you restrict, and then the binge to follow with restriction and all that fun stuff. But my mind will crave so many fun foods. It sounds like similar to yours. And it's always that choice of if I can eat whatever I want to, but if I eat this, will I feel well, right? Will I feel good? And usually I won't. But for me, once I start to have too many fun foods, and that's kind of where I'm at, where I'm just in this like kind of dark gray, sort of icky. They're making a decision about the kids' school today. So I'm like, oh, is that going to be done too? You know, and so I'm just in this like sort of place. And when there's been too many fun foods, I don't have the pause button that you need to stop and go, how will I? You can have anything you want, Nicole, but how will you feel when you're done?
Right.
Right. And what's interesting that I can't get enough of this stuff, of the data that's coming out with this, is that people for whom eating disorders have been in remission for years, or addiction for some sort, even if it's a process addiction, it doesn't have to be drugs or alcohol. This time it's coming back up, you know, and I think for me, this is one area that I'm open about, but it's not fully resolved. So I struggle sometimes to talk about it. But I think it's important that I force myself to talk about it, because I think so many people are dealing with this right now, where all of their old stuff is just bubbling up to the surface.
Yeah. I could tell you that I probably do have like an addiction personality when it comes to food. When it comes to processed food, like once I start, it's very difficult for me to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And I want it all the time. But I told myself at the beginning of making the conscious choice to eat this stuff, well, there's not much I can control right now, but I can control this. It was just an absolute lie, right? Because that food ends up controlling me at some point, right? But I think that a lot of times people that I've talked to who are struggling or have relapsed with during this time, not a therapist, right? But people reach out just because of the podcasting stuff. They have often said the same thing. Like, it gives me this sense of control at the beginning. And then they lose that control. And it's a, you know, it's a death spiral for a lot of people. And I mean, that mental illness part of this for kids all the way through adults, nobody understands the toll that this is all taking on them. And the holidays, I have a feeling, are going to exacerbate this big time.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking about, I'll use my own family just because I don't want to get anybody else, right? So in my family, we have, I still have a one grandparent alive, which I'm super blessed, right? At my age, mm-hmm. my grandma on my dad's side. So she's 97. And you talk about your 74-year-old, you know, mother-in-law saying, how many more, right? Well, mm-hmm. how many more
right.
Thanksgivings will there be? She's alone most of the time. So this woman's amazing. She lives on her own. She, you know, doesn't have any prescription meds. Like, it's mm-hmm. unbelievable, right? But I'm thinking, okay, how many more of these do we get with her? And she's alone anyway. And this would be a time where she at least would get more interaction with family. We haven't been able to go visit her because of this lately again. Like, we went during that in between when things were kind of okay and we kept right. our distance. We tried to be smart, but now it's back to can't see her. And now can't have Thanksgiving together. It's really difficult. So thinking about somebody of that age going she lived at the, if you think about it, right? She's just born like right after the big Spanish flu, right? Of the 1918-1919 flu. This is crazy for her. Like, she's mm-hmm. like, I cannot believe this. And never thought she would live through to see anything like this.
Right.
And now we just don't know what's going to happen. And what about the mental ability to keep going in life when you're shut in like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think able-bodied, you know, when you see high-functioning, able-bodied people who are home too much, the natural consequence of that is that the symptoms of depression tend to show up, you know? And some people tend to organically live in this space of gray, where, and I think I'm probably one of those people who, I do well in gray, where I can see multiple sides of things. And I don't know if maybe that comes from being a therapist where, you know, you hear so many different perspectives that you realize there's always more than one side than what the person is presenting or seeing. But I think if you're someone who's kind of type A, who likes to control things, who feels safer when there's that aspect of control, the fact that there aren't always right answers here is going to be very painful because you don't know what to do.
Right.
It doesn't feel good.
And I think a lot of us are looking for somebody else to lead and make the decision for us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, yeah. I could tell you my opinion right now in Illinois, we're kind of in this half-assed shutdown. Like, mm-hmm. hey, can you stay home? Hey, can you please not get together for Thanksgiving? Hey, you know, restaurants can have outdoor seating somehow as we head towards winter in Chicago. So they put up these bubbles and these tents, but it's outside the building, so it's okay. But inside's mm-hmm. not okay. And hey, every school district, all of you just go ahead and make decisions on your own.
Right.
It's like this half measure actually makes me more uncomfortable than if the government would just say, like, hey, we're going to shut down. Because, like, right now, I just feel like they're arbitrarily picking out places, which some of them I get. Like, research is starting to show more and more that restaurants are a problem at certain capacities. But, like, retail, they went down to 50% capacity unless you're a big box store, and then it's 25% capacity. I mean, I don't even know what to say to that. Like, so 1,000 people in, or whatever. So a small grocery store can have 30 people in it, but Target can have 1,000 people in it. Like, it's like this, I'm so confused as to what is okay, what's right. not okay. And it's almost like I do just like personally want to make my family stay shut in. But then I feel bad because well, everybody else is going to get together and I don't want to be the person to say, hey, no. And then nobody gets together because they feel bad. They don't want to leave somebody out. I mean, it's such a confusing time, right?
It is. And I go back to that whole like Tony Robbins question where he says, you know, life happens for you, not to you, right? And so when I'm in a good headspace, I can sort of sit in that question for a little bit and get curious and be like, okay, well, why am I having this experience right now? You know, why are we all having this experience right now? And we can pull out one day, I swear, I'm going to write a book called, I'm going to write a book called, But I Don't Have to Like It. Because we can all sit here and focus on gratitude, which would probably be beneficial, and focus on like all of the growth and lessons that are coming from all these difficult experiences. But I'm like at my core, I'm still a Jersey girl and I'm like, I don't fucking have to like any of this. Like I can grow and I can have, I can become a better person, but right now I don't like it. So,
well, I think that that's important. I don't know when we got to this thing that like we had to be able to accept everything and not necessarily like it, but you know, this is important that it's happening to us. No, it sucks.
Right.
I think it's all right to say that.
Yeah. Well, and that's where that culture of, I think, toxic positivity really hurts people because they make them think that they need to be happy during this.
Sorry. You know? I've got like a rumble going on upstairs.
I actually thought that was coming from my house.
No, it's mine. I don't know what my daughter's doing up there, but
she's tumbling.
She's having some fun. That's for sure.
But yeah, it's, you know, and so I don't have to like it. Now, that being said, if you look at the research on the happiest people on the planet and those who are, you know, the most content, grateful, joyful, they do find peace in these experiences. Like they're a little bit less of an asshole than I am about the whole process. So I can always choose to do it that way if I wanted to. But right now I'm still, for me, it's just there's too many variables floating around. So I'm just going to pout instead. That's sort of my
I mean, I think there's those people, but there's also the, you know, the Viktor Frankls of the world who find lessons in the misery, right? So I think that that's much more realistic to be able to say, yeah, this is miserable. What can I do about that? How do I stay in the present moment? That's different than joy or happiness or appreciation, right? Like those are different things. So I don't know. I really think that right now, the understanding where we're at is difficult because there's no clear direction. There's no good answers. And so now what do we do when family members or friends want to get together? Like, what do we do?
Well, I think it goes back to what we talked about last time, for me at least, which is the understanding that there's no, it's not like if I choose A over B, then I will be guaranteed feeling better. That it's no matter what I choose in this situation, there might be guilt, which I don't necessarily need to have. Guilt's an emotion for when you've done something wrong, right? But guilt shows up for me, at least, when I feel that my behaviors have disappointed someone else. And again, it's not necessarily an appropriate response because I haven't done anything wrong here. But that's a feeling that comes up. So, but either way, like if I go left here, I will feel guilty. If I go right, I will feel worried. And then if I get an entire class of kids sick, I will then also feel guilty.
Right.
Right. So it's not like there's just that clear path that says do that because that will guarantee joy.
Yeah. I think that you have to have the conversations as early as possible.
Yeah.
Around these upcoming, you know, get-togethers, holidays. And I also think that you've got to avoid facts, quote-unquote facts, and instead talk about the emotion of it. I think that that's probably a better conversation because if you start spouting positivity rates and numbers and deaths, you know, there's going to be friends and family members who simply don't see it the same way you do.
Well, I think we see that on the internet all the time, right? Everyone's perspective is going to be different based on their own experiences, their own biases. You know, you've lost someone who kind of holds a mirror, right? So that's going to give you a different emotion. I haven't had that experience. Someone who's lost someone they love is absolutely going to have a different, experience.
I think that's a really good example. Like, I can't say, because I knew somebody who passed, right, recently, that's the reason I don't want to get together, because they're going to not necessarily believe that COVID was the problem. And that's where we're at, right? Like, and there are people who just don't have the same belief system that I do, that this is a deadly virus, that they believe that right. It's a virus that's killing people who were already vulnerable, mm-hmm. and they would have died another way. Mm-hmm. That's just a fact. Like, I can't argue with that. Like, mm-hmm. there's no, we're not seeing eye to eye.
Right.
And I'm not going to change their mind. It's almost to the point of politics, right? I'm not going to change their mind.
Right.
They're not going to change mine. So you've almost got to avoid the subject and talk about it from a different perspective.
So when I was in graduate school doing my first internship, I was sort of talking about this. Like, what happens when you get into a bit of a loop with someone and you're just saying, my side, your side, my side, your side? Because that's not what therapy is about. But, you know, and my supervisor at the time said, I want you to imagine that there's a helicopter and that you're sitting inside the helicopter looking down over, and he used the term the session, but this would be wherever you are with the person. And you're just observing what's going on between the two people. And, you know, are arms crossed? What's the body language like? You know, this idea of it's process versus content would be sort of the clinical term for it. So when people are having a conversation and they get stuck on the content, that's where the conversation rarely goes anywhere. But what you're saying is, when you can focus on the process, which is, I can see that you're really upset about this, or I'm sorry that this decision disappoints you. That people, when they feel heard, when they feel validated, they just open right up in ways that debating numbers doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's important. Like, part of that process is not being critical of whatever they think.
Right.
That's you can think it's the dumbest idea or the dumbest thought process in the world, but you mm-hmm. cannot criticize at that moment, or you're going to lose to emotion.
Right.
Right. Because we're talking about people's belief systems at this point that are ingrained, and you can tie them back to other things in their lives, but there's a reason that you've kept them in your life. So at that point, if they're family, they're family. And now you get to make a decision on being around that family member. If they're friends, there's a reason that they're a friend. There's a reason that you're connected, and you've mm-hmm. got to try to remember that and find it, which is difficult. And I think we've talked about this before, but you've got to show yourself and them a lot of grace right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think avoiding the conversation or just taking a stubborn stance, both work.
Right. Right.
But it's not necessarily the optimal outcome at all.
Right.
But I think that if you did kind of those three things, have the conversation early, don't concentrate necessarily on quote unquote facts, because not everybody sees the same data set as you, and mm-hmm. don't criticize during the conversation, I think you're going to be way further along while you try to make decisions with friends and family on what to do. Because let's face it, we're talking about it when it comes to Thanksgiving because we're on Thanksgiving week. This is the same conversation for Christmas.
Right. Right. And so when you say don't criticize, I think it's important to say, okay, so if we're not criticizing, then what are we doing for people? Right. So we're in a conversation. We disagree. If I'm not criticizing, what is it that you feel like you would want to hear in this situation?
Yeah, I think I would be looking more to, I think, or what I've tried to do recently is acknowledge that we're not in the same space, and that, you know, kind of here's where I think we could head. And then, but before I even get to that, I actually usually acknowledge and then ask follow-up questions. I try to get them to open up and help me to understand, like, hey, why is it okay with you to go ahead and just get together regardless of what's going on in the world? And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. In the end, you've got to make the decision that's best for you. So, I mean, kind of maybe the fourth step is you make the decision for you. Let them to make decisions for them and stand your ground. And that's a little bit of what I've done for certain aspects of life, for sure. And doing that can, again, cause a problem, but at least you've had a conversation and tried to overcome it. Look, we're in a very difficult time. On top of a pandemic, we have had an election that is definitely the most tense in history, that's just starting to wind down, right? Like in terms of the heated climate of it. And it's like at the, and when I say wind down, I don't mean like it's done, but I'm talking about like, at least there's an end in sight. January's, you know, 2 months away, you know, inauguration is 2 months away.
Right.
Somebody's going to stand on those steps and get inaugurated. And it, and even that's not the end of this, but at least there's finality to this process. But man, we've got this, we don't talk about politics here. And I don't, I'm not talking politics specifically. I'm talking about the tension that it causes on top of a pandemic, on top of us feeling like we don't, we can't make a good decision, on top of our kids may or may not be in school. Well, for us, I know they're not in school and I don't see it happening anytime soon here. Although my older ones are in school. So different, same state, different part of it.
Oh, interesting.
They're in school and they have been.
Yeah.
So that's part of that uncertainty, right? But my point being that there's just so much happening that you've got to at some point take control over what you are going to do. I'll give an example again with our family. The tradition is that we spend Christmas Day with my family and Christmas Eve with Gretchen's on our father's side. And with that, this year, Gretchen's dad has already said, look, we're not doing Christmas Eve. And she's devastated. Like, her first reaction is, why not? Well, it's really not safe. And it won't be safe at Christmas either for anybody who has certain conditions, right? And we have older people that we would be with, and we, you know, what if that happens? What if we spread this virus to them and they don't get the next 8 years or 10 years or whatever, you know, 12 years, 20 years. But when you think about life, 20 years seems like a long time, and it is. But that could be the last 20 years of somebody's life versus the first 20 years of somebody's life. It's a big difference, and we don't want to end that on either end of the spectrum. So it's just, in this particular virus, doesn't attack the younger generation as much as the older. It still does, but it's, you know, disproportionate. So we've got to make decisions. But he made the decision himself. I mean, I'm sure he talked to his sister, you know, about it, but in the end, he made the decision and that's it. Which I commend. I mean, it's And it's the right decision. And in the end, Gretchen knows that. Gretchen knows it's the right decision, right? And we've talked about it. And she's, it's just, it's this emotion around what it means. Look, I've done this every year. I'm with my dad and my aunt and my brother. And now I can't be.
Right.
Just one more thing I can't do because we have this virus we can't seem to get under control.
Well, and I think everyone, you know, because it's the right thing for your family, right? And so I do think that everyone, though, has a different risk tolerance. Is that the right word?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or perspective or and so, you know, for someone else. And I think a lot of it depends on where you are geographically, right? Like if you're somewhere geographically that it doesn't, I mean, I don't know where it's not hitting at this point, but I'm sure there are places that are unaffected, you know? And so I think it's what I like about your father-in-law's approach is sort of, you had said before, this idea of acknowledging, validating, asking questions, then making the decision. And then to me, I would then have to add to that making, once you make the decision, this idea of then you have to mind your business, right? I make a decision. We made the decision not to go to Thanksgiving. Everybody's pissed and I have to just mind my business. It's none of my business. They are all allowed to be pissed at us over this. But for this Thanksgiving, this, with everything that we know in this moment, and with the consequences and the mandates being dropped in our lab, even though it doesn't make sense to me that if my mother-in-law lived two towns over, we could go over and see her there and we wouldn't have to quarantine for 14 days. But whatever, you know. And I think that's part of this too. Like when people, when you sort of feel like people don't maybe care as much or why aren't they getting this, I think a lot of times there are people who just ask a lot of questions about these arbitrary rules that are being put forth. And it doesn't mean that they want people to die or they don't care. I think, cause I get that a lot because I'm pretty active on social media. And so I'll put out some questions. I did one today and I haven't seen the responses yet. But there are just things that I question and then people will come at me with, don't you care what happens to people? And I'm like, you can care and ask questions at the same time, right? Those two aspects can coexist. But I'm sort of bouncing all over the place. But I think it's this idea of, you know, can you just mind your business and let people do what, let people be mad at you, let people be upset with you, you know? And that, I think, is that's a very hard thing for people to do.
I agree. I find it very interesting. And I don't remember this growing up. Maybe it did happen. But I think with social media, it gets exacerbated. Another reason I'm barely on it. Asking questions, it is not a position statement. Like, you should ask questions, a lot of them. And I always think about a courtroom when it comes to this, right? Attorneys only ask questions that they want to elicit the correct answer, right? But by the time a case gets to like a Supreme Court, they're asking questions from an angle that elicits the broad spectrum of answers that's going to help them make the decision that fits within the confines of our Constitution,
right?
Or at least they should be, right? But I kind of like that aspect, so I listen to this stuff. And I do hear, the justices are asking questions to elicit answers, not that they want to hear, but that they want an answer to. They want to hear the reasoning behind it. And oftentimes, it will be from a perspective that you would not expect from that justice based on, kind of who nominated them or what have you, like the political bent that you think that they have. And the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was one of the best at it. She asked great questions. And, the court's going to miss that because that's not always the case. Some justices don't ask anything. They just sit there silent, right? Like, it's very rare that you hear Clarence Thomas talk, right? because he's a very good listener. And whether you agree with his positions or not is irrelevant, right? It's about the questions and the listening and truly sitting back and listening. Mm-hmm. And that's the, I guess that's one thing I want to add here. When you're having these discussions, I just had this conversation with my 5-year-old. Don't be thinking of your answer or your retort or what you want to say next. Only listen. Like, just listen to what somebody else is saying. And I think social media has really hurt us in that aspect.
Right.
Because all anybody is doing is looking to retort. Mm-hmm. Right? Or put it in the echo chamber. Heck yeah.
Right.
You know?
Well, and what I find with, I learned this a long time ago. I don't remember if you taught me this. But when you're talking, when you're asking people questions and the conversation is, in general, when you ask people questions, we tend to avoid asking why questions because that seems to trigger the subconscious mind, which makes people feel defensive right away. So that's just a tip if you're out there talking to your mother-in-law, boys and girls. We can consider, oh, why are we doing it? You know, so I find that if I say, tell me more about what you're thinking with that, or what's the other one that I use a lot? Oh, when I feel like someone is saying something and I know that they're not hearing me, I will usually try to ask, I think this conversation is going in a different direction. So let me just pause for a second and ask you what is it that you hear me saying right now? And every time I've done that, I'm usually very surprised by how people have digested my words.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, I didn't say even close to that shit. I don't know where you came up with that. Like, that's
okay. Or you did and didn't realize it. Right. Like right. That's another part, you know, thing that, mm-hmm. I use, and I don't know if this is good or not, but I've used it for many years to get people to elaborate. And I'll often say, ooh, help me understand that more.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Versus tell me more. Like I'm letting them know, like, I'm truly trying to understand what you're doing or what you're talking about. And I think in a situation like we have here with the holidays, that is important. Right. And because some answers are going to be, well, help me understand that. Look, I just don't care about what's going on. I want to be with my family.
Right.
And I've heard that from people. I'm going to be with my family. And the last survey that I saw was 40% of people still plan on a normal Thanksgiving gathering.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that means, I mean, it's not like it's 10%. It's 40% of the of people that are still going to just do normal.
But that's the stuff that, okay, that's the stuff where I think people, that's the stuff that I think is hurting people right now. Because we look at those, do we know who the sample size was of the survey? Do we know where they went to collect the data? Do we know who, how do we know for sure that that's 40%?
Well, it's Pew Research Center. I mean, that's pretty reputable, right? Like, okay, yeah. So let's just say they're off by a factor of 2,
mm-hmm.
right? That's still, in statistics, is going to be well over a third, right? So I hear you. Like, I could tell surveys or data is a trigger for you because you're... I hear you, but in the end, I'm not bringing up something that I don't think that that's that far fetched to think that 40% are given the climate of the country.
Right.
Right.
Well, yeah,
I think that's probably a pretty solid number, right?
Given we're pretty split 50-50 here.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I guess that's my point, right? Like we are almost a country divided 50-50 or close to it, give or take, right? By a few percentage points in almost everything right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm a pretty independent thinker. So I kind of float back and forth on, mm-hmm. you know, which side, you know, that I kind of take on any given situation. But this one, I can believe 40% is right. I mean, It sounds right. It passes the smell test. And even if they're off a little bit, it's still a third of the country is going to do what they want.
Right.
Right. And I kind of get it. Like, I could make the I could make an argument right now that we've got a big enough space in our house that people could come over and we could do this just fine. I can make that argument.
Mm-hmm.
We've chosen not to. And that's our choice. But if somebody else was to tell me, like, you know, hey, everybody came over, you know, we set up like different tables, like per family. I get it. I mean, you're still indoors. You're breathing the same air. This is an airborne illness. Like,
right.
But I could understand like why you would do that and think it was okay. Like, I get that side. I get that perspective, that side. I get the perspective. Mm-hmm. Right. I totally get it. As long as you've had the discussion and everybody is comfortable being there, the part that I don't know what's going to be happening, right, is if somebody's going to have the wherewithal, if they don't think that they should be there, are you going to be the one to tell your family, like you guys did with your in-laws, right? Like, we're not coming.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a lot of strength.
Yeah.
And strength's just something that we don't have in abundance right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you've got to kind of pick and choose where to use it. And this is not a bad one.
Yeah. No, it's the whole thing is just, I think in general, people are like, I just want it to stop. And I think the scary part too, is that it's not like you said before, but it's not like January 1st, 2021.
Right.
It's all gone. You know, I think this is something we're going to be dealing with for quite a while. So it's this idea of being able to get comfortable with, again, with you doing what's right for your family and then minding your business. You know, I'm from North Jersey, and I remember my older cousins would sit around the table, and, you know, we would, I would say something about, like, you know, someone else maybe judging me or something. And they would be like, Nicole, what do you care? Just mind your business. It doesn't matter. Mind your business. And I always think of that, you know, this idea of can we get okay with people being disappointed in us, upset with us, mad at us? And I don't know if it's different for men, but I know women absolutely have a very, very hard time knowing that someone's upset with them. Not to generalize all women. I'm sure there are women out there who just don't give a shit. But I would say that the bulk of women I know and interact with, we tend to not want people mad at us.
Yeah, I mean, I could name, you know, because of social media, I could probably name, you know, people who are female that don't give a rip, you know, but
mm-hmm.
that's part of the problem, I think, with social media. I mean, you better be ready. You know,
oh,
if
yeah.
you're going to post something, you better be ready. Unless you mm-hmm. have curated your friend list to the point where it's only people who agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, I love that echo chamber. That's such a great way to describe it.
You know, you better be ready. So, I mean, it's, and I think that another thing is like, all right. So, one more. I hate that I always am railing on social, but if everybody could stop posting about their opinion on why other people shouldn't be doing anything, or if somebody gets COVID shaming them, like this is super unhelpful. Like, I am so sick. Like, I only scroll like once a day, right? And I'm already sick of seeing, like, you know, everybody stay home. You shouldn't be doing Thanksgiving. Like, to your mind, your business. Like, that's not your business what somebody else does. Granted, right. We are in a public health crisis. I think we all agree with that. Well, most of us, maybe not half the country, who knows, but I think at least you and I agree, like, this is a public health crisis we need to take seriously. But
right.
constantly posting your opinion, like, we've just basically shifted from the election opinion to the COVID opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gross. Like, can't we discuss other things? Aren't there other things in life we could be talking about? Like, that's why I go into groups, right? And that's it, like, for the most part. No Fear Project. Mm-hmm. People share good and bad. We help mm-hmm. where we need to. We celebrate where we can.
Right.
And, you know, I'm in there, and maybe one or two other groups that just basically are about trying to be fun or funny. And the rest of it I avoid because mm-hmm. I just, you're active on it. I'm not. I can't, like, I just can't. And I figured that out about myself, finally. Like, I know I can't, so why bother?
I would say I have a pretty high tolerance for it, and I have been hitting the take a break button more in the last week than in the last 2 weeks than I than ever before, because I know what I need right now to sort of start the path back up the hill to feeling better, you know. And I typically I enjoy reading other people's opinions and getting other perspectives, but not in the tone with which it's being delivered, which is exactly what you're saying. You know, don't tell me to wear a mask. I fucking wear a mask. Get off my ass.
Right. Well, you know? Or, you know, somebody gets COVID. I know people who have gotten COVID who were wearing a mask. Like, a mask isn't 100%. It's just a mitigating factor. Right. Like, it's not some magic bullet that kills the virus, right? Like, right. It's just a mitigating factor. I know people that I know for a fact were wearing a mask all the time when they were around others and still got COVID. It does happen, right? And I guess my point is that post, go ahead and make whatever post you want. Like, in the end, I guess my point is that understand that that post is only making you feel better. It's not impacting other people to change their mind. If anything, it's going to make them dig in and exactly. Not, right? Yeah. So, and then it's just going to be a long string of why one person's right and the other one's wrong. I mean, it's not helpful, you know?
Right.
Maybe it's helpful to you because you need that validation to feel better and you need 10 people to tell you that you were right. I don't know. But in the end, I could tell you that social media initially was supposed to be about discussion and interaction and connection. And now it's pretty much just about pushing agendas. To me.
Well, but I do think that we also need to have we don't need to do anything, right? I'm not the boss of anyone. But
I backed off my statement on that.
But this idea of I think people are absolutely lacking connection right now. And so for some people that echo chamber does make them feel less alone, you know? And for that, I can have compassion for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the end, you could say whatever you want because the only person I'm the boss of is me.
Right.
And I don't have to look at it.
Right. You can take a break.
I don't have to look at any social. I can snooze you. I can scroll by it. Like, and I've gotten pretty good at that, right, overall.
Right.
It's just lately, man, even people who never posted about, I always enjoyed it because they were posting about running or something else. And it's just COVID, mask, you know, you're killing people if you have your family over for Thanksgiving. And I'm like, whoa, right. Like, how about, right. How about some moderation and like kind of, let's take a break like with that. Like, and I, you know, I hear in the end though, it's a really good point. Some people need that right now.
Well, and the other thing is when I'm not so stuck in it, and I can pull back from it, I can cultivate compassion for people who say stuff that is so rigid and so controlling and so just the polar opposite of me, right? Because I'm, you know, I'm much more loosey-goosey about things because I know that they're scared. And so they think the meaner, the firmer, the more articles they post, that, you know, someone held a wedding in Maine and it killed X amount of people, the more they're just scared. And so if I can remind myself that they're just scared, then I can sort of calm the storm of thoughts that show up where I just want to, like, blast them and be like, do you not understand the things in the air and we breathe the air?
Right.
Like, how do you not get that? You know, but they're scared.
Right.
You know, and when you're not super controlling, when you're someone who can kind of trust the universe and things are always how they're supposed to be and let things unfold with curiosity and openness, they're not ever going, like, someone rigid and controlling isn't, that terrifies them just as much. You know, I don't know that I said that correctly.
I think I'm getting what you're saying, but not fully sure.
Well, the idea of not being controlling for very controlling people, the idea that they can't, like you, I think you and I are both in the same space where we understand that there are parameters to how much we can control here. So
we try to
work within those parameters.
Right. Versus somebody who is controlling in general and has realized they can't control this. So they dig in.
They dig in. And so they're really moving. And so it comes across as angry and judgy and mean, but I think they're really moving from a place of very, very scared.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I think that that's a theme just in general right now. So to try to wrap up, we've been talking way longer than I intended on this one.
I was
right?
Like, we're going to do a short one today.
Yeah. but to kind of bring it all together, look, we're in a spot right now that you're going to have difficult conversations with friends and family about getting together. Do that with curiosity and open mind. Do that with some grace for both sides. Don't go in being judgmental. I think guilt's tough to take out of this equation for a lot of us. You've talked about it a couple times. I think that's a really good point. Like, just kind of accept that guilt right now and give yourself some grace with it. And try to ask questions, acknowledge, don't second guess. And as you've said a few times, mind your business. That reminds me of the Fresh Prince episode. You remember? I don't know if you ever watched that, but
I did.
Mind your business. so I think that was coming down to some like a fight though, but Will Smith was pretty funny in that one. So anyway, we need to do that. But in the end, you cannot just avoid the conversation with friends and family about what you're going to do. Just ignoring it and not showing up that day is probably going to cause more problems within your family than kind of having that talk and getting to that next level.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to add before we wrap her up?
No, just I think when you're really struggling, the question that's been helping me a lot lately is, you know, if I think of myself 5 years from now and I look back on how I handled this experience, what would I think? You know, and if you could just try to work toward having more moments where you would look back and think, I handled that pretty well, or I was less of an asshole, or, you know, I was brave, or I was curious. For me, that's been, you know, really helpful in asking myself, you know, in prioritizing in terms of what really matters.
Yeah. I mean, we've got to wrap up, but I almost want to come back to this probably in the future, because I find asking that question difficult, because I have a very tough time picturing 5 years from now when I can barely get through 5 minutes from now. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll be a good discussion in the future.
Yeah. Okay. I wrote it down.
Awesome.
It's in the notes, Pete.
Beautiful.
In the notes. All right.
All right. Let's wrap up this episode. I want to thank our Patreon supporters. You make the group and show possible. Team E for eWellness. You're our executive producer. We couldn't do this without you. We really appreciate it. And we want to thank our producer, the Money, Motivation, and Motherhood podcast, and our companion podcast, the Fat Man Chronicles and That Wine Pod, and the Be Better Today podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to the No Fear Project on your favorite podcast app and leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. It really does help people find the show. Sorry we went so long in this one, but we had a lot to talk about. And remember, the way forward is together. The time to conquer is now.
Thank you for listening to the No Fear Project. Original music is from Josh and Dean. Join us on social media by searching the No Fear Project on Facebook and Instagram. Check out thenofearproject.com for more information, including in-person presentations on fear customized for your organization. The No Fear Project is committed to helping those with mental illness get help and to defeating the stigma. If you have any thoughts of harming yourself or suicide, please contact the Suicide Prevention Hotline for help now at 800-273-8255. Remember, you are not alone. The No Fear Project is a production of Paragon Media, all rights reserved.